Awesome. There we go. Hi, Sam. You're on the air. Welcome to the Save the Turnips Blog Talk Show. How are you?
Thank you, Marty. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, good, Sam. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Thanks for being here tonight. We really appreciate it. We're looking forward to talking with you. Sam, could you just give our listeners a little bit of background on who you are, and also just a little bit about your story about how you got into the how you became attorney, got involved in family law, and you know where you're at right now.
Well, I practice out of Lee County, Florida. All my firm does is family law. Our focus is on men's rights in the family court system. I got into practicing law. I've been practicing 8 years now. I went through a divorce in the 90s, and I was representing myself, and I found it absurd that the father was just a number,
mm-hmm.
you know, a case number, and that's all I was. And all I was there for was to pay child support. And my relationship with my son really had no bearing on what was going on there. And one day the judge turned around to me and she said, you know, you're pretty good at this. Why don't you become an attorney? I had been a butcher by trade. And, you know, I've talked to my spiritual advisor, Mike, and he told me, well, how long do you have to go to school? I said, 7 years. He said, well, in 7 years, you're either going to be still being about the legal system or you're going to be an attorney. It's up to you. So I went back to school.
Oh, my gosh. What a great story. So you
you know what?
And you self-educated yourself on this topic and became very good at it. And so now this is your profession. You've done this for 8 years. That is really cool.
Yeah, it's been an experience, you know, to be on the other side of the table, more, you know, so to speak. After being through the system for so many years and having my rights just totally trashed, you know, to be able to defend fathers and fight for their rights to, you know, participate in their kids' lives. You know, most of my clients are good fathers who only want to see their children on a regular basis, and the courts are set up just really to get finances from them, but they don't understand
mm-hmm.
what that does to the children along the way.
Especially
Do you see the court?
You heard Mike. I was just curious, Sam, what your differences, do you see things different now that you're, like, on the other side of the fence? You know, you went through the system were you officially a turnip? Were you somebody that they were trying to throw in jail for being behind on child support, or were you just a parental alienation case?
It was a parental alienation case. You know, I paid my child support on time, but I had the mother of my son suffered from some type of postpartum depression after he was born, and it was a nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was a total nightmare, and no matter what I did or what I brought in as proof, you know, it was just totally disregarded, and it was a battle I fought for about 10 years. And, you know, it was an ongoing fight just to, you know, finally bring it to court. A number of contempts of court against her for not allowing me to see my son. And just
Really?
Oh, yeah, it was horrible. And I
had
a judge.
And now that she was in contempt of court, they didn't throw her in jail, I'm assuming.
Well, that's the problem is that, you know, what do? They give you a piece of paper that says that they're in willful contempt. And in Florida, what they do is you get makeup time if it's convenient to the custodial parent. So, you know, whether you get that makeup time or not, the worst sanction is a change in the custody of the child. But when that was the last case I brought based on all the contempts. And, you know, the judge found that that wasn't a valid, you know, argument. So, but, you know, coming out of it at the end, you know, it just gave me the will to stand up and fight for other men in the system. And what's happened over the years, you know, with the law evolving here in Florida, men have a lot more rights now as far as time sharing is concerned. We did away with the word custody and visitation here.
You know, Sam, I wanted to ask you about that because we have a lot of, I think it was what, in 08 that they made the most recent change to the custody statute, 08 or 09. And I've been hearing from out of Florida that a lot more men are actually getting shared parenting and significant amounts of time with their kids. Would you speak to how that law is actually working out in Florida?
Yeah, I think it's coming along. I mean, compared to what it was, a lot of the judges here just had a standard every other weekend, and maybe like a Wednesday night, every Wednesday night, but not overnight. You know, but now the argument that we've made is that the law says time sharing. Nobody, there's not a presumption that anybody is the primary parent anymore. In fact, that was taken out of the statute itself, and everybody's on equal footing. I mean, there's still such a bias towards men. I think what happens is you have statutes that are enacted, but it takes the court a number of years to be able to catch up to them, and it takes the district courts 2, 3, 4 years to start issuing rulings, that'll determine what exactly the statutes mean. So we're kind of in this flux until we get some case law. We just had a case that we appealed to the second DCA and won. It was on a modification case. But, what I see happening here is that at some point, when they originally did the law here, it was supposed to be a presumption of 50-50. Each had 50% of the time, but in the last writings of it, they took that out. So we're heading there, but I can see in time that, it's going to be a 50-50 state. And when you think about it, why not? I mean, if you have two parents that are willing and able to nurture their child and love their child, why should one parent not be able to do that on a regular basis? It just doesn't make any sense. And I heard
Are you urging men today to really hang in there and contest for custody? I know, for many years men were told, look, that every other weekend, the standard visitation is the best you can do. Is the environment such today that guys who want more time, are you really telling them, you've got a good shot at it these days and let's go for it?
Most of our cases, when they come in the door, I tell them, you're probably going to wind up with a 40 to 50% of the overnights. Of course, if the mother is on drugs or, there's stuff like that going on, of course, he would become the major caretaker of the child. But if all else is equal, most of the guys that we have as clients, they wind up with 50-50 or 40-60. It's close to 50-50 most of the time. And I tell them that coming in. A lot of them, they
That's
work
great.
Crazy hours, 12, 14 hours a day, and, they want to be the parent that's got most of the time, and they want to go and wake the kid up 11 o'clock at night to bring the child home. And I have to explain to them that you need to be available, and if all else is equal and you're both on equal footing, you both have the time to parent, I don't see why not we can't do that. And most of our cases wind up that way.
That's fantastic. That's great to hear.
That is fantastic.
We're seeing that trend line go across the country, and I'm really glad to hear that. And I'm there's so much hope for Florida fathers, and we just want to see that continue to move across the country. Let's talk a little bit about child support. This whole pay and appear, could you give some folks, let them know where your website is and kind of what you've got up on your website. But then also, Sam, talk a little bit about this case that you had that went up to the Florida Supreme Court on the pay or appear and what was going on with pay or appear. And I want to do that as a lead-in to talking about Turner versus Price, because you've got some experience with this crazy child support system and what goes on with the courts and incarceration. And you know, you're not like your everyday attorney coming in. You've actually fought these types of programs up through the state Supreme Court and come out, you know, in a good place there. Could you talk a little bit about the pay or appear program and then the case you brought and what happened there?
Yeah, I've got a ton of information on my website having to do with family law, of course, Florida-related. My website is the number 4, THEMEN.com, forthemen.com. The Pay or Appear program was a program that was instituted here in Lee County, Florida, in 2003. It had been about 850 participants through when the program was quashed by the Supreme Court. There was probably about 240 at that particular time. What Pay or Appear did was, if somebody was late paying their child support, a call would go to a particular clerk of court. That clerk would bring an order up to the judge, and the person, the payor, the person paying child support, would receive an order in the mail or get served with it, which basically put them into this Pay or Appear program. Their monthly child support payments were changed to weekly payments, and the order stated that if they didn't make their payment by 5 o'clock on Wednesday, that they had to show up in court at 1:30 in the afternoon on Friday to face a contempt hearing. Now, at those hearings, the payee, the person receiving child support, usually the mother, was excused from appearing, so the payor was denied his right to face his accuser. There was no motion that was filed telling the person what they did wrong, what the contemptuous behavior is, how much money they might owe. There was no notice of the hearing. So once you received the order, it went on until your child was out of the child support system, which means you could have been in the program for 18 years. There was really no way to get out. A lot of payors filed motions to try to get out, and they weren't allowed out. So they were stuck in this maze, and the problem with there were a number of problems, but some of the problems were they would pay the support disbursement unit, and by the time the unit got the money and processed it, it took them 10, 11 days to process it. Now, a payment that was made on time didn't get processed by Wednesday, 5 o'clock, maybe by the next Wednesday. So the person doesn't show up Friday for the hearing because, hey, I made my payment. A writ of bodily attachment, a warrant was issued on Friday because they weren't there. And they're getting arrested. I had guys that got arrested in front of their kids on a Saturday night. You know, I made my payment. Here's my receipt. Well, that's not good enough. It didn't hit the clerk's office by 5 o'clock on Wednesday. So it was a vicious cycle. A lot of the people in the program, they wound up losing their jobs because they had to be at the program every Friday. They weren't allowed to move out of the county. The county down here is very depressed economically, and there's not a whole lot of work. There was a lot of construction going on, a lot of real estate. The housing market was booming like 2004, 2005, 2006. And once that went under, all these people were unemployed, and they couldn't leave the county to go get work anywhere else because they were stuck in the Pay or Appear program. I found out about
the Pay or Appear program was, If you fall behind on child support, if you're a turnip, you know, falling behind on child support, they're no fault of their own, they're behind that very first payment, they're immediately expected to be in court that Friday. And if they're not, then a warrant goes out for their arrest.
Well,
so
what
they
happens,
get stuck in going to court every single Friday until they're caught up completely. And, yeah, how does the court expect them to keep a job and to expect them to... How long was that in existence?
It was initiated in 2003 by a couple of judges and attorneys here, And it went on till I found out about it. A client came into my office, I believe it was in 2009, and he said, oh, I'm in this pay-or-appear program. I says, what's that? So he explained it to me, and I said, that's crazy. So I took a look at it, and what happened was we got one client I filed up in the second DCA for a writ of prohibition. And what they did at that point was they issued an administrative order sanctioning the program. They said that they made changes. Now they had it wrong, but now they have it right. But it still wasn't right. And I had another guy that was incarcerated. I filed a writ of habeas corpus. They let him out. The court found the petition was moot. I wound up in the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court wound up quashing the program because of the due process violations. Now, if you read the transcripts, Marty, the transcripts are outrageous. There was a clerk of court who would tell the judges, you know, basically that, you know, this person didn't pay, owes whatever, $200. The person would have the receipt. No, I sent my money. I did it online. It went to Tallahassee. It's paid. Oh, it didn't hit our system by 5 o'clock Wednesday. Lock them up. And they were locking up people left and right on Friday afternoon.
Oh, my word.
Well, Sam, when we first talked about this, you had told me about a couple of different outrageous things that were happening. I mean, give some people, we focus a good part of our attention on indigent child support obligors that are being locked up. Tell our listeners some of the things that you were seeing and hearing about in terms of what was happening and the dollar amounts that we're talking about. We're not talking about people that were $5,000 behind or that were $3,000 behind. Tell us some of the things that you were seeing they were locking people up over and some of the things they were doing.
I would say, Mike, that the majority of the people in the program were indigent or minimum wage earners. A lot of them, you know, when they go through that child support, the initial order, they use the guidelines and they hit them for all the daycare and everything. And, you know, 60-70% of their money is going to child support, which is impossible to pay and sustain themselves at the same time. There were people that were in court. There was one they were going to lock up over a dollar, and somebody else paid his,
a dollar.
I know of people that were locked up for $4. I had a transcript. They were taking jewelry off of people. It was a system where sometimes the charge, the sheriff would charge for the writ to pick them up was $90. There were a lot of times the sheriff's fee was more than what these people owed. The weekly fees were like they broke down child support. So figure it out. If somebody has even a $200, you know, because these are all low-income people, it's $50 a week. So for $50, these people had to be there every Friday. A lot of them were borrowing, stealing, or doing whatever to try to pay it. And they come in with $40. They say, well, look, I have $40. Can I make it up next week? You know, and they'd say, no. They take the $40 and they throw them in jail for the 10. Then they started that they had to do 10 job searches a day. These are people with no vehicles, no cars, no money. There was one person, they took his money. He said, wait a second, I need money for the bus to get home. And they said, nope, child support first. You know, he leaves there with no way to get home. It was outrageous. It was really outrageous.
That sounds like shaking down the floor is what it sounds like.
Yeah. So you said the non-custodial parent was not allowed to be, was not invited to be in this courtroom. But what if you had a situation where the non-custodial parent came in and said, look, I know, you know, my ex-husband is trying. He's not a bad person. I don't want him locked up in jail. I don't need the money. I'm okay. I understand he's got a bad situation. I mean, did you ever have anything like that? And what would the courts do if the custodial parent was fighting it and saying, no, I don't need this. Don't lock him up.
Well, Marty, a lot of the people it was mostly men that were in this pay or peer program, and
yeah.
a lot of the mothers that put them in were just vindictive or didn't want the father to be a part of the kid's life. Because
mm-hmm.
you think about it, if there's always a warrant out for you or there's always that warrant hanging over your head, I got a lot of guys with a lot of psychological problems that still can't sleep because of what they went through. They were locked up 10, 12 times a year. But they were just being vindictive and held that over their head. Anytime they wanted them locked up, you know, there was another pay or peer hearing that they had to attend. The custodial parent was excused from having to show up at the hearing. They didn't have to go there. So what did they care? They didn't have to lose any work. They didn't have to go to court. The judge stepped
yeah.
into the shoes of the payee. And, you know, it was totally outrageous.
So, Sam, is this program on hold now for the foreseeable future? What's the status? You've got it stayed for a while. What's going on with it? Where's it going to go from here?
Well, it's been about 9 months now, 10 months. The clerk of court, I almost had a heart attack one day. I'm sitting watching the news at 5:30, and I see pay or appear come across the screen, and the clerk's on there, and he says, the pay or appear program will be back in 2 to 3 weeks.
Oh.